Prepare to be astonished.
It's that time again.
Let's get started.
From the Clatsop County Historical Society, an adventure in history with Matt Burns and Alana Quila.
You should never be allowed to talk to people.
Some people without brains do an awful lot of talking.
And now, with today's adventure, it's Mac and Alana.
Good evening, and welcome to An Adventure in History. I'm Alana Quila with Providence Seaside Hospital, here this evening with Mac Burns, Clatsop County Historical Society. And tonight, we have a very, very special guest.
You're classing the place up. Our guests just keep getting better and better.
Well, this one...
And this is a coup. I'm excited.
World-renowned NBC sportscaster in our presence.
It's amazing.
Who is it? Dun, dun, dun.
I don't know.
Do you want to give us a couple words?
Bow wow.
I wonder if people could guess just from that.
Some people could.
I think some people can. It's funny how many people say, I recognize your voice.
And we do have David Fry here tonight. Thank you for coming and joining us.
Thank you.
Happy to hear about your stories. And you are a born and raised Oregonian.
I am. I'm a duck through and through. I tell everybody I went to the University of Oregon for 17 years without graduating because my dad was an assistant football coach there for 12 years and then the head coach for 5. And it was all during my growing up, going through school time. Yeah. So yes, I am a duck. I bleed green and yellow. But
and you still love him. Go Beavs.
But I got my degree from Oregon State. So I tried to cover both sides of it in case I ever came back.
You're playing both sides. I like that. That's covering your bases.
Well, I couldn't find an animal science program at the University of Oregon. So
that's true.
Came to Oregon State, graduated in animal science. And that isn't what led me into the dog world, but I was trying to get into veterinary school at the time and had just gotten out of the Army to come back to school and wanted to see if that would work.
We have so much to go into.
Yeah, we gotta whip through this fast.
Okay.
So I do have to give one quick commercial though, because there's like a week left of this Away From Home exhibit about Native American boarding schools. It's gone May 25th. That's the last day. So you got one weekend.
This is the nearest it's going to be.
This is it, unless you want to go to Pennsylvania next or wait a year and then go to Boise, Idaho.
Right.
And who wants to go to Boise, Idaho? Well, I guess maybe some people. And this exhibit would be a good reason. But you could see it here. It'd be a lot cheaper.
Right.
And easier.
The Heritage Museum in Astoria. What are your hours now?
Open every day. We're in our summer hours, 10 to 5. So it's just $5 to get in, or if you're a member, it's free. So it's a really powerful exhibit. We've been getting amazing feedback. And it's a kick in the gut, but it's an important part of our history.
And large building, so very easy to social distance. I think that's nice to point out.
Easy to social distance.
Yeah. So. Great.
All right, so let's whip through the history highlights because I want to get back to tons of stories because I'm already mesmerized. All right, so these are things that happen tomorrow, May 17th. So you can appear smart to your friends or family or win bets or whatever you want to do. Maybe you'll be on Jeopardy and win there. 1875, the first Kentucky Derby winner.
I saw that one.
we're always like within a week of being timely on things.
And was it the real winner?
I don't know.
War Admiral?
It was Oliver Lewis aboard, and I'm not going to pronounce it right, Aristides.
Aristides. I don't know that. I've petted secretariats.
Wow.
Myself. So
impressive.
That's my horse racing career.
That was it.
Picked the winner this year. That was good.
But did you pick the real winner?
I picked the real winner this year. Oh, well, now it seems to be an asterisk by that, but that's another story. That's another show.
There you go.
1883, Buffalo Bill's first Wild West show opens in Omaha, Nebraska.
Oh, how fun.
And it really is kind of what makes us, our image of the Old West is in large part because of this show.
I loved it. I was in Annie Get Your Gun way back in the day.
Wow.
Yeah, so I did the Wild Wild West show.
And you've been in movies? You're like...
Yeah, I know.
I'm surrounded by celebrities. I feel so uncelebrity-ish.
We'll work with you, Mac.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay.
1900, The Wonderful Wizard of Oz is first published.
Oh, wow. I like that.
1943, The Memphis Belle flies its 25th bombing mission. That was a good movie. They actually did it really, really well.
Wow.
So, 1965, the FBI laboratory weighs in on the dirty lyrics of Louie Louie. It's an Oregon thing there.
Yeah, I know. We need the FBI to tell us that, right?
and they declared the lyrics of the song to be officially unintelligible.
Oh.
Which I have to admit, the first time I heard the song, watching Animal House when I was like 13 or 12, I thought they were singing Luau Luau, like, oh, we're going to have a Hawaiian luau.
Yeah, it is unintelligible.
And then a year later, I realized how stupid I was, and it was Louie Louie. But apparently the FBI couldn't tell either. 2004, Massachusetts becomes the first U.S. state to legalize same-sex marriages.
Okay, good.
Massachusetts. But our history highlight of the day, the thing I think had the most impact on our history, 1954, Brown versus the Board of Education is decided. In a major civil rights victory, the U.S. Supreme Court hands down a unanimous decision. Imagine that. In Brown versus Board of Education of Topeka, Kansas, ruling that racial segregation in public educational facilities is unconstitutional.
Amazing. Great.
Separate is not
equal.
Wow.
Yep.
So
made a difference in my family, too, because it also impacted people with disabilities. It was so the same legislation.
Of course.
Yep. So same thing.
Wow.
That's great.
Yeah.
So, you did miss one, though.
Oh, what did I
miss?
You
missed a very Scandinavian one.
Oh,
so it's okay, folks. It's Mac. He's, you know, he's not a real local.
I'm not.
1814, Denmark cedes Norway to Sweden.
We're just giving Norway away.
Yep. Denmark said, nope. It's your problem.
Did they not want Norway? I mean, was there a winner or loser in this?
What's the holiday in May? Septien de May or Mai or something like that?
Oh, I married
into some big
it.
Scandinavian holiday in May, and they have a big festival for it in Wisconsin, in Stoughton, Wisconsin, my dad's and mom's hometown. And my dad was inducted into the Hall of Fame in Stoughton, Wisconsin on that holiday.
Wow. Well, there's the Midsummer Festival, but it comes later. Yeah, but maybe it comes earlier.
Maybe.
I'll have to find out. My brother will give me...
There we go.
Hard time.
So were you born in Wisconsin?
No, I was born in Portland.
Okay. Because I'm a cheesehead officially.
Well, somebody has to be.
and unofficially, Mac. Come on.
I was only there 3 years, so it doesn't really
My mom
count.
And dad grew up in Wisconsin, went to the University of Wisconsin in Whitewater State for my mom, and packed up. My dad went to war and came back, finished his school, and they packed up the car and moved to Portland.
Wow.
Where he got his first coaching and teaching job at Grant High School.
I love it.
You know what the great story is, and I think you were there the day that I came to my first volunteer luncheon, and my wife introduced me and said, my husband David, David Fry, and you might know his father, you might have heard of his father, Jerry Fry, who was the football coach at the University of Oregon. And one little old lady in the background, God bless her.
Yes.
Do you know her name? Do you know her? I don't know her name.
There's a couple of them. It was Molly, and then also... I'm not going to think of the other girl's name, but yes.
But Molly and her friend, they raise their hand and say, we knew Mr. Fry. He was our high school health teacher. He was one of my favorite teachers at Grant High School back in 1948 or 49.
Oh, my goodness.
Oh, their eyes just got huge because truly, I mean, David really downplays the story because he was in a volunteer orientation at Providence Seaside Hospital by yours truly. You know, we go around the room and introduce ourselves, and he does not introduce himself. I mean, he works for NBC Sports, and it's like, David, are you going to say anything more? I mean, or are we just going to surprise these folks with who you are? And so he finally does explain what he does and who he is and where he's been. And yeah, this sweet story comes out, and they had such fond memories of your father. It was very touching for you.
It was great. It was great. I had another story about my father that came out this week about a man that I had met through the dog world who ends up that he was stationed at the same company in the Philippines during World War II in the South Pacific. And I met him totally. I was hosting a TV show in 1995, and this guy came on to plug his book about his dog in the South Pacific. And I said, my dad was in the South Pacific. And he says, really, where was he? And I said, he was in the Philippines in the 26th Air Reconnaissance, 26th Airborne,
Something.
The 26th Recon. And he said, that was my company. He says, what's your dad's name? I said, Jerry Fry. He says, I knew your dad. So right when we're done, I go running to the phone and call dad, you know, before cell phones. Said, I just met Bill Wynn, and he was telling the story about his great dog, Smokey. He says, I know Bill Wynn. He says, I knew that dog. That was a great dog. And turns out it was a little Yorkie that was found in the jungle that Bill Wynn took in, and it would help him lay cable and do things that they couldn't do without digging ditches. And even though it was a little, you know, 3-pound dog, it became quite a story called Yorkie Doodle Dandy, Story of Smokey. And it was great. It got my dad back together with Bill. He hadn't seen him since the war. Bill brought him to the 26th Photo Recon reunion, And he saw all these guys that he had been in the service with 50 years before. It was a great moment.
Aww. That is crazy. That's just amazing. So I would buy that book just by the title.
Well, look where Bill just died 3 weeks ago at the age of 99.
Oh, wow. So, that's special. So your dad's sports career started at Grant High School.
Started at Grant.
But it went on.
Started at Lincoln High School. Started at Grant High School, went to Lincoln High School from there. And then he went on to Willamette University as an assistant coach and went on to the University of Oregon as an assistant coach in 1955. So, I've been in Eugene my whole life until I finished 4 years of college without graduating. And I can't imagine why not, all the hard work I did in college. Went into the Army for 3 years at that point as a veterinary specialist and was at Walter Reed for 3 years and had a great Army time, really. I was at Walter Reed from 71 to 74 in Washington, D.C., and I got out in August of 1974. I left Federal Service and Washington, D.C. the same day as Richard Nixon.
Oh.
So put that in your history bank for August.
But did you put 8th. Your fingers up in the victory
zone? I had to drive myself. I didn't get to ride on the airplane.
Well, that doesn't seem fair.
No, I pointed that out.
So back up a little bit. What got you interested in veterinarian?
Yep.
What?
Well, you know, we never had a dog growing up. I tell this story all over the place. And we never had a dog in our family growing up to speak of. And when I moved into my own house in college, my girlfriend said, "Let's get a dog." I'm a 20-year-old guy, you know. I'm going to do whatever the girl says. And so I said, "Okay, what kind?" She said, "How about an Afghan hound?" I said, "I don't know what that is." Mm-hmm. She says, "Well, let's get one." I said, "Okay." So we found one. We got the Afghan hound, brought it home. 3 weeks later, the girl left, the dog stayed, and it was the best thing that could have happened to all three of us. So that was my first Afghan hound. I met other people with Afghan hounds, eventually got involved in showing dogs, and at a level that was quite competitive, had the top Afghan female in the history of the sport. And that's when I met the Westminster people who asked me if I would do their television.
A little...
I left a few things out.
I was going to say, now wait a minute, how does that happen?
So the Westminster Dog Show, it historically wasn't it the longest running dog show? And your co-host were the longest serving anchors for that.
I was there 27 years. Yeah. And the first 12 years of that, I did it from, I was living in Seattle. I would fly out from Seattle, do the dog show, and go back home, show my dogs. I owned two sports bars, had my own PR agency. So that was my life between the dog show in New York, but I would still go to dog shows on weekends. And then in 2002, I moved to New York, and Westminster gave me a full-time job as their director of media relations and their television guy. So so I was there until 2016 was my last show, so 27 years of doing the dog show on TV. In 27 years, I had 9 different partners. I had partners ranging from Joe Garagiola, we all know Joe from his baseball and Today Show times and all the stories that he did. Lester Holt was my partner for 3 years.
I didn't realize that.
I told Lester, I said, I'm glad I could help you. I'm glad I could make you a star so you could be on the news. Same thing with O'Hurley, with John O'Hurley, who's been my partner for all 19 years that we've done the National Dog Show on Thanksgiving Day on NBC. I said, you know, you came to me from this little comedy show. what was it called? Seinfeld or something like that. I have made you a star. I got you involved with the dogs. And so we have a great relationship, John and his wife, Lisa, are great friends of ours. And Lisa and Sherry are close friends. And my wife, Sherry. And we have done a lot in 19 years of doing that dog show on TV. 25 million people watch that show every year. So it's
amazing.
It is amazing.
I think our numbers are a little bit below that here.
They are. But we're still very
popular.
We're building.
There we go.
You know, he has a popular social media account, so just wait for this podcast
we're gonna get the bump shared. We're going to get the big bump.
We will, at least this one.
So you also jumped over. How do you go from showing dogs to, I mean, did you have training or did they just say, this guy's got a great personality and a great voice, let's put him on the air?
Well, there were a couple of stops along the way. Out of college, when I was finishing up my degree at Oregon State, the Denver Broncos called me and asked me if I wanted to be their director of promotions. I had worked there for them during one quarter of school. I had worked there on game day for them. And so when their job opened up, they called and asked if I would be interested. And so I took that job and said, I'm not going to get into veterinary school now. I guess my veterinary work will have to be with the Broncos. So we did that. So I got there and was there for a couple of years. We went to the Super Bowl my second year there. And then the next year I went to work for the 49ers. And I was there a year, ended up leaving there and going to work ultimately for, went to Seattle at that time. But from Seattle, I went to New York to work for ABC Sports as a publicist for Monday Night Football. So I had a few stops along the way and met a lot of great people. And I think one of the people, somebody told the president of the Westminster Kennel Club that I had done PR work in the NFL, and they thought, well, that's great. You're probably good on TV. I said, you know, I've never been on air. I said, but I think I can do it. I've been around all these guys. I've been around guys like Howard Cosell and the original O.J. Simpson and lots of great people in my life.
Asterisk.
And I had a lot of fun. I had a lot of fun doing that. So maybe I can. Let's see. So he flew me out. The guy who was president of Westminster was a guy named Chet Collier, who was at the time the executive vice president for the Fox News Channel. He was building the Fox News Channel with Roger Ailes, and he also had this interest in dogs. And so he brought me in and hired me. After an audition, I said, well, this will be fun for a couple of years. Let's see what happens. And ends up being 27 years, my whole life.
It's quite popular in the sporting world.
Yes.
I mean, dog shows, which is also why I think it's interesting that you have such a passion for therapy dogs. Because when I think of the two, I think that they are very opposites. But they're not. And you took a passion for the sporting event and really turned it into a passion for these animals and what their purpose is on this.
Well, it gave me the platform, you know, and I had been sort of involved with therapy dogs. And then I met Sherry and she got me deeply involved with the therapy dogs. And it was fun because when I did the dog show on TV, if the Afghan hound that's being shown, they fill out a card and tell me, you know, some things about the dog. And I think they all started to hear that I was partial to therapy dogs. So they all, suddenly a lot more dogs were doing therapy dog work. And I'm not sure that was true or they just hadn't told us before. And so the dog show gave me the platform to talk about therapy dogs, to mm-hmm. talk about real dogs and real people, not just show dogs that sometimes people have the idea that, you know, these dogs are a little different. I said, they are just like your dog at home. Says they steal food off the counter. They shed hair on all our black clothes. They even drink out of a toilet once in a while, just like your dog at home. I said, we just sort of dress them up a little bit, if you will, and take them to dog shows on weekends. So I think it helps spread the word. Again, having the platform to do that with all the millions of viewers that we had for the Westminster Dog Show, I think that helped grow the activity, and I met some great people who were started the activity in the Seattle area with called Delta Society at the time, now called Pet Partners, that helped me along the way. And so did Sherry. Sherry wrote her master's thesis on animal-assisted therapy. So, and we had just gotten together at that point, but I was her dog wrangler for all of her presentations at school. I would bring the two Britneys in and she would talk and I would keep the dogs under control somehow. So that just gave me that opportunity. And then being in New York gave us all kinds of exposure. It gave us a new sort of understanding of what was going on with therapy dogs and what exactly they meant to all of us, because we were in the middle. Sherry was working for the Ronald McDonald House. So we were in the middle of all of that, bringing the dogs to the Ronald McDonald House all the time. And it gave us a whole understanding of what exactly our dogs do for us. I mean, we know scientifically what they do. We know that interacting with a dog lowers your blood pressure and lowers your heart rate. But now, the science is backing it up. But now, we've already seen what they do, and now we see the science backing it up. And so we're getting into more and more places. Our dogs, we wrote a pilot program for Memorial Sloan Kettering Cancer Center, most famous cancer hospital in the world. They'd never had dogs in there. And we wrote a pilot program for them. They brought us in on one floor, and now we're all through the hospital. And it's our therapy, our charity was called Angel on a Leash for therapy dogs. And And we were all over the country with that. So,
and what you did with Pet Partners is you had an overseen organization that registered these dogs and also registered their handlers to make sure that they were doing the correct things so that they were safe for both the dog and for the patient. So I think that's why even at Sloan Kettering, they said, oh, this, we feel comfortable with this because we know you're doing the right things.
Absolutely. You've got a great feel for it. It's when we say we are presenting good trainers, people that we've trained, we insure the dogs, we offer liability insurance, and how can you go wrong? See, we're doing everything we can to make it a good activity.
Talk a little bit about that training, that it's not just some dude with a dog that he got at a kennel and the next day is walking into a hospital. Talk a little bit about what goes into that.
I like to say that great therapy dogs are born, not made, and that our training that we did at both at our level and through Delta Society and Pet Partners was more for the human than the dog. Your job as a handler is to keep the dog out of trouble. You let them have the opportunity and then stay out of their way. I did an interview on the Today Show, and Meredith Vieira says, what are you thinking about when you're sitting there, you know, when you're in a room with a dog and a patient? I said, I'm thinking about staying out of their way. I'm thinking about keeping them out of trouble and not letting them get tangled up in any tubes or step in anybody's sutures or jump around on a bed with somebody who might not be comfortable. They need to be sitting real still. So that's my job, because the dog walks into the room and the energy changes. People smile, haven't smiled for a while. They talk when they haven't had much to talk about for a while. They just get a whole different perspective of their day because we're there with the dog. And I can't tell you how many times Alana's heard this, how many times at the Ronald McDonald House a parent would say to me, that's the first time she smiled today. Mm-hmm. And to have that, that just makes the whole thing.
That's priceless.
Well, even at Providence, when you would go into patients' rooms, what I found interesting was really, truly just watching the dog and how serious and calm these dogs are. And he has well-behaved dogs, don't get me wrong. And one thing about Pet Partners and the restrictions is it is very focused and it's limited. So you can't be in there for hours on end, right? Because the dog is working very hard at controlling everything, all of its feelings. And then you'd go out into the parking lot and the dog's just running crazy and going to the bathroom and jumping and barking. So it's a very different atmosphere, but I thought it was so impressive because it's so different.
It's kind of like the dog show. You know, they are real dogs. It's just right. That they understand.
They can hone
the
in.
The great ones understand what they're doing there.
Yeah.
And you can't run them into the ground. We say, with my dogs, I say an hour is it.
I think that's all that we allow.
And people say, you know, oh, well, my dog, we worked 3 hours the other afternoon. I said, you know what? That's not great for the dog.
Right.
This isn't about you. It's about the dog. And it's about the patient. And it's about the medical staff.
Right.
The medical professionals who are there. They get as much out of a therapy dog walking onto their floor as the patients do in most cases. So that's what the dogs are doing. They're spontaneous. They're themselves. But they have to be under control, physically under control.
I love the notion that they get it, that they're working, whether it's at the dog show or as a therapy dog, that they understand, I'm on now, I've got to be serious. And then, like you say, out in the parking lot going nuts.
Yeah, they're very different. You know, my daughter, my oldest, was very little when she first met David and Sherilyn's dogs. And she was terrified of dogs. And then she found their dogs, you know. So now she, of course, only loves their dogs. because well, they do. They turn. They know the person that they're talking to or that's with them. And they're very age appropriate or just environment appropriate.
Well, the great thing is these dogs the dogs are just like the people. They may have an activity that they like more than another. They may not like a bunch of screaming kids around them. And we could see that at the Ronald McDonald House with the therapy dogs that came in through our program, that some dogs just weren't right for it. Grace was great everywhere, but Grace and I would go to the VA hospital. Every Wednesday at 11 o'clock, we'd go to the VA hospital, and we would do bedside visits. We would interact with the staff. But one thing that she did, she worked with the PTs and the OTs, the physical therapists and the occupational therapists, with guys who maybe had lost a limb or were learning how to walk again, that she could motivate them to do things where the PTs and the OTs would say to me, I've been trying to get him to do that all week, and she got him to do it in 20 minutes.
Yeah.
And that's, you know, part of the thing that we can do with them too. But most of the time, you know, they're great. They are great at coming up with the results just by being there and being petted and showing that they care.
I love it. So one thing you had mentioned before the show, switching gears just a little, was preparing for COVID and still doing your dog shows. How did that change? Because you still did the National Dog Show.
Well, we still did. We're sort of at the mercy of the American Kennel Club, you know, who still did their shows. And at the with NBC now, I'm doing two shows a year. I do the Beverly Hills Dog Show in the spring and the National Dog Show that airs on Thanksgiving Day. And we can't travel. The dogs still have to abide by social distancing and the competitors wearing their masks and limiting the entry and things like that. So that makes it different. But the National Dog Show that we just did in November on Thanksgiving Day, we did it remotely. I was in Seattle in my Zoom room in Seattle in my condo there. And John O'Hurley, my partner, was in his home in Beverly Hills. Mary Carrillo, our floor reporter, was in Florida. The dog show's in a Philadelphia suburb. And the NBC Sports Production House is in Stamford, Connecticut. And we were all connected. And they visited me. I was there with my dogs. I was on. John was on with his dogs. And then we did all the voiceover stuff from there.
And it seemed very seamless.
It was amazingly so. And I think, you know, the production people are getting good at it, obviously. But the very first time we did was a year ago with the Beverly Hills show, where we had been to the show and taped all of our things going on at the show. And what we normally do is then edit that down into a two-hour show and put it on television. So we were there and had taped all those things. So now the production people go back, edit it into a two-hour show. We come back in and do the voiceover for most of it. And this year the pandemic hit between those two things, between the dog show and the voiceovers. And so we had to do the voiceovers remotely, and it hadn't really been done very much before. And by the time we did it and aired it, it wasn't perfect, but it was pretty good for doing it for the first time. Our show was the first original sports programming to air on NBC during the pandemic. So it was pretty amazing.
Good, and good ratings, too.
And yeah. We always have great ratings. I know. That's a wonderful thing about it.
Hey, it keeps keeps your job going.
So we're almost out of time, and we could bring you back for a four-parter, I think. We should. But you live in Seattle, and you live in Oregon.
I live in Cannon Beach full-time.
So tell us, just in 30 seconds or thereabouts, what do you love about living in Cannon Beach?
Well, I love the beach. I love the fact that it's an active tourist town a little bit, but I love that it's an Oregon reminder. I get to talk to people about my roots in Oregon. They don't always understand that. I said, you know what? My dad's first game as head football coach at the University of Oregon was the first game played at Autzen Stadium. And I say,
yeah, amazing.
Oh, my God, that was 1967. That was over 50 years ago. I said, that's amazing. But that's the roots that we have in Oregon that we will always have. And I think anybody who grew up in Oregon has that same feel.
That's great. Thank you so much, David, for coming in this evening.
You're welcome. Thank you for having me.
We'll have you back.
Fun. We will.
You might even earn a t-shirt.
I got a few more stories.
Yeah.
All right. Thanks for listening. Go make some history. We'll catch you next week.
Thank you for joining us for An Adventure in History. An Adventure in History is created and produced by the Clatsop County Historical Society and brought to you by KMUN.